If you want to get your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. Gizmo Sapiens.
Hey, and welcome to Gizmo Sapiens Show 176. We're going to talk about entertainment today. With me today is Matt, and also in the room is Ezra and Thomas, but I don't know if they're going to chime in too much.
Well, we don't have mics, so I don't know how we're going to do that.
Yeah, these mics are pretty decent. You're picking you up over the room.
Huh.
So there's a lot of, it's summertime, which you would think the entertainment industry would slow down, but now the entertainment has, you know, as a kid in the 80s, television started in the fall and it kind of ended like in May. And then it was all reruns all summer long. And you know, there were specialty channels like HBO and stuff would show movies. But I mean, even back then, HBO, they didn't have a lot of original content. And so they were showing licensed movies that, you know, had already had theatrical releases. So it wasn't like it was new content. And a lot of times they would show the same stuff every day at the same time every day. I remember watching Arthur with Dudley Moore over and over and over again.
You could like set your watch to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And on Saturday mornings was exciting because this was prior to MTV and they had like an hour of music videos. I remember that's the first place I ever saw Eddie Grant and Electric Avenue.
Nowadays you have Demio for that.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about entertainment. I'm going to start off with some things that are always near and dear to Matt and I's heart. So we're going to talk about Star Trek.
Okay.
So season 2 of Star Trek Lower Decks has not even aired yet. It's supposed to air sometime in August, I believe, is the air date.
12th, I think.
It's close to my birthday, yes. Somewhere early in August. But they're already doing, they've already started production on season 3 of Lower Decks. Tawny Newsom was shown in her Twitter, made a Twitter post with her in the studio on a season 3 episode where she was doing the voiceovers. And then there was also some posts on Twitter from Jack Quaid, who plays Ensign Boimler, about how he's so glad that they're back to season 3 and they can be in the studios together to work off each other to do the dialogue, because season 2 was really tough to do, where they were doing recording dialogue. I want to know how they did this and got it so, because it would have to be production quality. They were doing it over Zoom.
Wow. That's tough.
Yeah.
Every single episode takes place where they're just chatting to each other over like whatever their in-universe fictional Zoom equivalent is.
Well, I mean, it could possibly be that way to some degree, because at the end of season 1, Boimler left the Cerritos and went to the Titan under Captain Riker. And so his story in season 2 is as Lieutenant Boimler on the Titan, while Mariner is still on the Cerritos with the rest of the Lower Deck cast. So that should be interesting for season 2, but either it's going to be interesting as we watch season 2 and then we watch season 3, which I have a feeling isn't going to be as far behind as the distance between seasons 2 and 3 will not be as great as it has been over the last year.
Still, Why Women Kill is actually an awesome show.
It is. If you haven't watched that on Paramount Plus, it's one of their other series that's only available, and it's pretty sweet. And it's different. It's a Mark Cherry show, which is kind of interesting. If you know who Mark Cherry is, he's pretty famous in the industry for mystery shows, and he's well known in the CBS universe. And the first season is completely available for streaming on Paramount Plus, and the second season just started. There were 3 episodes in, but the first season is interesting because there's actually 3 simultaneous stories going on at the same time. You have one story which is set in the late 50s, one story which is set in the 80s, and one story which is set in 2019, 2020. And they have 3 different casts, but the stories kind of all relate because it's they all live in the same house, just in different decades. Huh. And it's really interesting. Now, season two, they didn't just do that. They're back in the 40s, and they're doing a it's a late 40s time place, and it's a single cast and single story, at least so far. There's been a lot of discussion in my house over that one because they wanted it to work like the first season. Like, are we going to jump back and forth in the timeline? But so far they haven't. And that show is full of stars. The first season had Lucy Liu as one of the stars. This season has Alison Tolman. It's not like they. It's more like a. In essence, it's more like a Star Trek or an Apple TV. Apple TV Plus series where they've really put a lot of writing and production value and casting into the series.
What about the guy from Shaun of the Dead who's in there as well?
Oh, Simon Pegg's cohort from Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. As a side note, I think Hot Fuzz is one of the greatest movies ever made, even though I think Simon Pegg is probably the worst Scotty ever. Everybody talks about Super Troopers, and all I think of is Hot Fuzz. So, also in the Star Trek vein, since we're on Paramount Plus, there is a possible retcon moment going on with Strange New Worlds and TOS. And it's something that only, like, super geeky Star Trek fans would probably really care about. But in Where No Man Has Gone Before, which was the second pilot officially of the original Star Trek, that was supposed to take place in 2265. And then that was the only episode that actually took place in that year. And then the following episodes and everything else in TOS took place in 2266. Yes, I am a super geek on Star Trek. Strange New Worlds, the way they're billing it is that it's supposed to be 10 years, just like Discovery was originally billed, it's supposed to be the 10 years prior to Kirk's Enterprise. And so this is Pike's Enterprise. If you get down to it, Rebecca Romijn in an interview says it's supposed to be 10 plus years, but since it's truly become an episodic system like TOS was, at least this season one, the season, doesn't start until like most of the the stories are like in 2257. And we do have a 2264 episode with the Strange New Worlds cast, Pike number one and Spock in Short Treks, which would be just prior technically to Kirk taking command of the Enterprise. And then in 2267 is technically the year in TOS when the Menagerie happens. So between that Short Treks and Where No Man Has Gone Before is supposed to be the actual events of the original pilot, The Cage. So there's a lot of consternation going on in the Star Trek universe about whether Akiva Goldsman and Kurtzman and all them are kind of retconning part of TOS because they're wanting to fit in the Strange New Worlds timeline, which is like a couple years into that 10-year period. I don't care, frankly. But it's just an interesting thing to note.
The Stardate system never made sense during TOS anyway.
Well, part of it didn't because they never aired the TOS episodes in order. You know? At least in order of the way Gene Roddenberry thought they should be. And you know, the authors had written them. So I'm not... It's weird. But it's interesting.
What was the one Star Trek spinoff show that had the weird rock opening?
Enterprise?
Yeah. That is such a weird... I don't know why. Or, yeah, you explain why, because they explained it. They, executives at the time, they wanted, like, a band or something?
Well, there was a couple things going on. Back when Paramount... UPN, United Paramount Network, yeah. Enterprise was their flagship show when they started that network. And there were a few things going on. One, they...
Voyager was the...
Was the original, but then when they moved on and UPN, before UPN became part of the, combined with Warner Brothers and they became the CW, which I think is totally weird. Enterprise was supposed to be their flagship show. And so there were two things. Even though it was Star Trek, they didn't want it to be called Star Trek. So it was called Enterprise, and Star Trek was not into the title until the third season when they finally capitulated to fans and said, oh yeah, it is Star Trek, isn't it? And then at the time, that was, you know, back when the Jonas Brothers and all the boy bands had kind of come, the resurgence of the early 2000s boy bands. And so they were wanting to, a lot of other shows were doing the thing where they were having like a musical act written into the script on every episode, whether it was like they were, you know, at a club, but it was like a real name band group playing in the club. They were thinking that they would have in the mess hall, they would have musicians playing and music and have live music and have them represented in this period. So they didn't want, you know, an orchestral theme to the show because they were trying to be more hip and cool. And how'd that work out for them?
Well, it was already more hip and cool just by omitting the word Star Trek from the title.
They may leave that theme song is still a guilty pleasure of mine.
I don't mind.
It's a good tune.
It's mind the theme song, and I liked it because it did set the show apart. It's memorable.
The only thing that is the problem with the theme song is that it doesn't fit with the show being a Star Trek show, and so it doesn't end up even fitting in the context of the show at all originally.
I don't know. I think it does because it does. It, you know, Enterprise is interesting because the only time the Federation is mentioned is actually in the series finale when Archer is speaking at the formation of the Federation. So even though Starfleet exists...
I just mean the opening theme song, it doesn't end up fitting with the source footage that they put with it. It's just...
Season, yes. When they changed it after, was it the second season that they changed it or the third? But they, after the first season, it's the same song, but they like added more looped drum beats and stuff to it.
Disco-fied it.
Yeah. And I'm not as big a fan of that version, but the first season.
Which
version,
is funny because they did the same thing to Deep Space Nine.
Yes, they did.
And that actually improved the Deep Space Nine
theme,
yeah, if you ask me. But yep. I could have done without it in Enterprise.
Let me see if I have any more Star Trek. Oh, one of the other things that we've talked about, which is kind of interesting, is evidently production, even though there's no official production going on, things are still happening on the Section 31 show with Georgiou. Now,
supposedly, I don't believe
it. And she's made comments recently talking about it that she's still under obligation for that show.
Well, sure, she signed a contract. They'll use her somewhere, but it ain't gonna be on a Section 31 show.
I don't think so. I think it might more be a Mirror Universe show, which fans actually have been clamoring for too.
Yeah, you know, you want to talk about a show that would need a whole new concept for, that would be it. And I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, I would too. I think it'd be cool to see it from the other perspective.
I mean, you kind of got bit of that with the... Through the Looking Glass or whatever the... two-parter of Enterprise was pretty much from the Terran Empire perspective.
Yeah.
And that one had a good theme song.
It did have a good
theme song. It had a much better theme song than than the whole series. I don't know. I every time I hear Section 31, it's like the 4 years of waiting for Discovery to happen.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
well, you got to think about it. So right now, there are 4 active Star Trek programs being done for Paramount. You have,
yeah, but honestly, though, by the time you add them all up, you're only really getting a season a year anyway.
Correct.
By the standards of like 22-ish episodes a year.
Well, you know, Alex Kurtzman has said, you know, he's the holder of the Star Trek, him and Gene Roddenberry's son. They're the ones who are the executive producers and kind of control the Star Trek universe, and they're wanting to have, it won't be the same show, but a Star Trek show 365 days a year, you know.
Well,
a weekly show or 52 weeks of a show. And you know, they're getting closer to that, because when you talk about,
You haven't mentioned Prodigy yet.
Well, and I haven't
finished casting.
Yeah, but to me, yes, they've cast it, but they don't. My understanding is they don't really have any scripts written for Prodigy, which means that they can't go into production. And Prodigy production is going to be totally different. It'll be more like the Lower Decks production than it will be the live shows. And those shows are getting 16 episodes a season. So you divide that up, you know, you're talking about
four. The other thing that's also weird about Prodigy is that that's the first Star Trek show to have the Nickelodeon name on it.
Yes.
Because it's a Nickelodeon series, and so it's not just a Paramount Plus thing. It is a Nickelodeon show.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the concept is if we start them young, we can, you know, like Disney does with Star Wars, then it's a feeder program, you know. They'll continue to watch Star Trek as they grow up.
That's the theory.
But right now,
Prodigy is going to be good.
At 16 weeks a show per season for Discovery, Lower Decks, Picard, and upcoming Strange New Worlds, we're coming very close to that 52 weeks a year. You're at about 40.
The problem is Prodigy is not going to be on
UPN or Paramount Plus.
Mountain.
Yeah. I think it will be eventually.
If it is, it's going to be on Nickelodeon too.
Yeah.
That doesn't count in my book.
I agree. But that gets you almost about 48 weeks. Because, you know, some of these series will have 14 episodes, some will have 16, and it'll vary a little bit but as of right now, evidently they're well past half of the episodes for season one of Strange New Worlds, which still has a 2022 premiere date. Discovery is done for the next season, for season four, under production. Let me go back to Strange New World. Strange New World not only has completed more than half their episodes for the season, but they're in post-production. The ones that are completed are actually in post-production right now. Discovery is in, from what I've read, is post-production is almost complete on season four. And it does have a 2021 release date too. But Picard is also in production with about half of its episodes filmed. I don't know where they are in the, you know,
but part of that is they're filming season three somewhat simultaneously, because they're trying to make extended of Delancey while they have him.
Yes, and he's supposed to be in 6 episodes across season two and season three.
Which I still haven't decided how I feel about that.
I don't know.
Still, my least favorite character in Star Trek is Q.
I don't know if I'd go that far either, but
yeah,
he does rank on my list of bad characters.
Well, he John DeLancey ranks as one of my least favorite people to see in person.
Uh-huh.
Does he have that ego in person?
Well, I don't think he feels comfortable in front of speaking in front of live crowds.
He doesn't.
Because he's dyslexic.
Yes.
And when you do a convention appearance, you're interacting with people. It would be like putting Matt in front of, you know, making Matt sign autographs and be kind and cordial to people and all. He's an introvert to a large degree.
Yeah, he really is.
And he does not, as opposed to being appearing shy or aloof, he gets in your face and is kind of egotistical and mean and stuff because he just doesn't like doing it. And I mean, I've seen and I've personally met John DeLancey probably 3 or 4 times because he, for some reason, I guess he made good money on the convention circuit because he did a lot of conventions.
Which is hilarious for somebody who didn't like doing them.
I know. But you're right. There also, the other thing that's going on too is that you have Picard seasons 2 and 3 production is in L.A. and in Vancouver, British Columbia is Strange New Worlds production. And so that's part of the reason they're able to do all that simultaneously. I also think there's this... I watched an interview with Akiva Goldsmith, and he said that, you know, some of this was related to they're trying to make up for the fact that they had to postpone production so long because of COVID. So they're trying to get back so that there's not this this huge gap between seasons after season 2 airs. But Picard also is not going to air until 2022. You know, season 2 won't.
I don't buy that as an excuse. I think they're doing... Well, Picard, they're doing it the way they're doing it because of DeLancey.
Well, I think it's not just DeLancey. I mean,
but I think it's also Patrick Stewart.
You look at the age of Patrick Stewart, they know that
they have very limited time.
They have limited time, yeah. Yeah.
And he'll go for as long as he can go.
Yes.
But.
Yeah. So, let's move on to the Disneyverse.
Yes, let's.
So.
Because that's the show that I want to talk about.
Loki?
Or
the Bad Batch?
Bad Batch has been okay. You probably like it more than I do.
I would probably agree with that assessment.
The Monsters, Inc. spinoff show has piqued my interest, but I haven't seen anything of it yet except for the trailer. It looks okay. Billy Crystal and John Goodman, they're reprising their characters. You know, it takes place after the first original Monsters, Inc. movie. It actually looks very interesting. They don't have any notes on this, so they're just—it's just dead silence from them at the moment.
I watched the MCU and the Star Wars properties and some of the other properties from Disney, but they don't excite me a whole lot.
Loki was awesome.
Now, see, I disagree with you. Other than the fact that I do like TVA, I could see a role playing game coming around the whole TVA construct.
Uh huh.
But I like the Loki character. I like Tom Hiddleston. But I was not impressed with the first episode.
Really?
No.
I literally watched it like 3 times. Like,
I watched it twice because I thought, man, I'm not impressed with this. What did I miss? So I watched it again.
If we're talking about like any streaming medium period, although this is getting a little bit off topic, but I've been so bored with a lot of the new stuff except for Why Women Kill and a few other things. I've just been watching reruns of The Asylum, Z Nation on Netflix.
That was a good show that ended poorly.
It ended poorly because it wasn't Discovery that was the channel. It was because the Sci-Fi Channel executives just decided, cancel it. We won't allow you to have any more seasons or anything to wrap this up, but, you know, just cancel it. And so they were forced to really just try and rush all of this stuff out and get the story essentially wrapped up as fast as possible in the limited time frame that they have.
That sounds like Stargate Universe.
Yeah, that's true. But going back to Loki, I mean, it was entertaining. But, like, I
liked the first episode better than the first episode of
WandaVision.
Oh, yeah. By leaps and bounds.
Oh, absolutely.
But even Falcon and the Winter Soldier,
I still felt like, now Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I did not feel like there was this intellectual gap between trying to understand what was going on and the show, the character motivations in the show. WandaVision, the first episode, I mean, you're halfway through the first season of WandaVision when you finally figure out exactly what's going on because it's so obscure. And I still had a feeling like that a little bit of...
Really?
Of that with Loki. I mean, I understand what's going on, but... I don't know. It had that feeling because, you know, they're intentionally, and I think that's the issue. Instead of through the story being vague, using the story and the plot line to really push the mystery of what's going on, the dialogue is what's pushing the vagueness in it. And it's like talking about he who shall not be named. I mean, you know.
Or it's like, no, I'm thinking of the parody from one of the scary movies. But like, it's like the later Matrix sequels in which there's the one scene of the guy in the room with all the CRT screens around him and everything, and he just spouts this nonsense, and people are like, what is he saying? What is he talking about? Because it's nonsense. So they're trying to decipher it. It's just...
And I also, I don't like the fact that I'm so sick of it. That's why I'm a little concerned about this. The timeline issue in TOS and Strange New Worlds, I'm not so worried about. Because again, like you said, the star dates don't make sense. But that is a very specific sequence that they go into. And we've created the TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority, to explain away why we're retconning part of MCU universe history. You know, and the other thing too that kind of disappoints me about Loki is, yeah, we don't know what's going on in between, but we know how it's going to end.
But do we though?
Well, he'll just, you know. The timeline is fixed.
Assuming he's already said he can't go back.
Yeah.
So he's gonna live in TVA land. If he's gonna live at all.
Then who goes back to become Loki and kill Freya? And
that's already happened.
But not yet.
I agree with you. I think it ultimately...
I mean, part of the problem I have
is... I think he's going to have to grow as a character to recognize that he has to go back.
Yeah. Maybe that... I don't know. I don't know. I'm kind of sick of the trope of messing with the timeline, which both MCU and Star Trek have... particularly Star Trek, because they're the ones who started it, have repeatedly done over the years. Let's find something new to...
Star Trek stole that from Galaxy Quest, actually.
Well, Galaxy Quest, one of the greatest series of Star Trek.
Second greatest Star Trek movie ever.
Yeah. After Wrath of Khan. But I mean, yeah, I mean, that trope is tired. Particularly, I mean, I've been watching some good science fiction. There actually has been some new good science fiction, and hopefully it'll make it past its second season. But like, I don't know if you've watched the new War of the Worlds by Epic.
I have not.
So it is it's not like the original War of the Worlds movie. It's not like the Tom Cruise version of the War of the Worlds movie. They took it and they, I think they did something brilliant with it. One, they had it happen in such a way that it actually makes sense how things happen and how the aliens invaded and how they killed people and all this other stuff. I don't want to spoil it because it does deviate quite a bit from the Orson Welles story in some of it, but it makes sense. And we're kind of in, right now I'm in episode 4 of season 2, which is the new season. And now it's not a, there are moments of lots of action and things that go on, but it's more of an intellectual show because they're trying to figure out things. It also correlates really, really well with the whole, and I don't think this was intentional because production started the first season aired in 2019, which would have been prior to COVID, but there are a lot of correlations between COVID and what's going on. It's been an excellent, excellent show. And each episode, because it's an epic series, is an hour and 15 minutes of solid show. But it has a ton of Gabriel Byrne stars in it. And it has a very, very good cast. There's no Americans in this show. Everybody is British. Well, there's one American. Lady Grantham is Gabriel Byrne's wife in the show. She's the token American. Everybody else is either British or French, or at least so far. But it's very, it's been very, very entertaining, very, very captivating. It's a show that I sit there and I wait for the DVR to catch it every week because I'm like, I cannot wait. What's happening next in this show? And another one that I thought is really good, which Netflix has had really mediocre crap. Like I tried to watch Army of the Dead because I had heard that it was really funny. And I got through about the first 30 minutes and I'm like, this is so stupid, it's not even funny, you know, as a zombie movie. But they took a comic book called Sweet Tooth and they turned it into a series. And it is excellent.
Robert Downey Jr. is a producer for that. I haven't watched it yet.
Watch it. It is extremely, extremely good. The show has been, well, the first season, I watched it, you know, true to Netflix, they give you the whole season at one time. I think we watched the whole thing in 2 days. And it, too, is another story that has a lot of correlations with, you know, with the way things are going and how people are feeling and stuff. Because I can give you a little slight recap. So something similar to COVID, a respiratory virus starts killing people worldwide. And so the population drops and hospitals are overwhelmed, you know, kind of like COVID. Simultaneously, babies are being born who are hybrids of humans and animals. And it's kind of random. Some of them are, you know, some of them are humans and pigs, some are humans and deer dogs. And dogs and beavers and I mean cats. Birds and porcupines
But they don't know if there's a link to...
But they can't prove that there's a link between the virus and people having children. And all children being born since that time are hybrids. And it's just a really interesting take on what fear and contagion can do to a society. And how they'll react and do things, and kind of shows you, you know, and to me, what's interesting about it is it kind of shows you, they kind of take the time to show you, you know, because these things are happening doesn't mean morality must be thrown out, you know. And it also shows you how oppressive government can put things in place, like making mask mandates and other things, you know.
Even though it's been proven that the social distancing is actually the thing that prevents people from spreading compared to masks.
But, you know, this whole idea of compassion kind of went out the window. It's really, really, really good. It's probably, I would recommend everybody, no matter who they are, watch Sweet Tooth. It just, it does so... It's such a good look at society as today, you know, kind of as a moral allegory.
I haven't watched it yet, but I hadn't read that into the trailer.
No, you don't. You do not see, and you do not get that out of the trailer. It's not until you watch the series. And again, it was one of those, watched it over a 2-day period, and it was like, man, this was really good. I need to see what the next episode is. And then I'm like, we're done.
The trailer had me like,
well, that,
what is this?
Well, you think it's a kid's show.
Well, the only reason why it was on my radar at all was it was publicized that Robert Downey Jr. had something to do with it. Which, I mean, I'll watch that guy do anything after being Tony Stark. He's not even in this.
No.
He's strictly a producer, and that to me is...
No,
I producers are important to a production.
Yeah.
But if that's what you're trying to tell me is the selling point of a show before it launches, I'm a little skeptical going into it. And then when I saw the trailer, I was like, what is this mess? But now you're saying there's more to it.
There's a lot more to it. As a matter of fact, I enjoyed it so much. I now want to go back and find the comic books that it are based on.
And read those.
And read all of those.
Interesting. I'm always taken aback at how different we are. You were more impressed with Bad Batch than Loki.
Well, you know, there's something I really like about Bad Batch, particularly this last episode.
Really?
And that is Bad Batch is not a great show, okay? But none of the Clone Jedi War cartoons were great. They're entertaining. But are they extremely well written? No, I would say the Bad Batch is probably above average so far as written on some of these Star Wars animated series.
Now, don't get me wrong. I like Dave Filoni a lot, and I think he has been a big part of the Renaissance. But... this show just does not.
It's
not speaking to me.
It speaks to me.
But then again, I wasn't a big fan of Rebels and the Clone Wars cartoons either.
It speaks to me because it's that whole liberty versus government control thing. And you know, and to me, they're the true rebels, you know, because they have ideals that they fight for. But they realize that what the government has become is not those ideals. And, you know, and so it, to me, Bad Batch is more of a feel-good show.
That
it's entertaining. I like it. Is it great? No. Sweet Tooth is great.
The themes that you're mentioning about Bad Batch are the only reason why I watch it.
Yeah.
I'm not expecting anything really... earth-shattering out of that show. I'm waiting for Mandalorian and the Book of Boba Fett.
See, I think the Book of Boba Fett's going to suck. And I'll tell you why. Because the actor who played Boba Fett in the prequel movies, mm-hmm. who plays Boba Fett in The Mandalorian, is unbelievable as a Mandalorian any longer. And if they go down the path, you know, that they are with him in that show, I don't think that show is going to be very good. And I don't think they need a Book of Boba Fett show when you have The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
It's too much Mandalorian. Now, the Ahsoka show, that might be okay.
The Ahsoka show and Mandalorian 3 are the two that I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah.
I mean, only because...
I'm interested in the Ben Kenobi show only because I like the character.
Yeah.
But we know how that ends.
Yeah.
We know how it begins, and we know how it ends.
For me, just bring on Thrawn. I don't care about anything else at this point. If Bad Batch were to bring in Thrawn, I'd care about Bad Batch.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm all about Thrawn. Let's bring on the big bad, and let's get it.
You know, I think they made a mistake by throwing out the Timothy Zahn books as canon. George Lucas said they were canon because the way he licensed the Star Wars property for them to write books, it had to follow and be contiguous. And so, you know, if you were an author, and luckily Timothy Zahn was the first one to really write books after Return of the Jedi, so he got to kind of create the universe post Return of the Jedi without having to retcon. You know, his only restriction was you can't retcon anything that happened before. And I think so. I do too. I think when they were going to do the trilogy of movies, it should have been the Heir to the Throne trilogy.
Well, we knew that was going to be a disaster when they hired JJ, and after that, it was like, well, we're
and JJ not and Richie get, Cunningham.
We're not going to get something good anyway, so.
We did get two movies that were good, but the problem was that they were prequels. We got Rogue One, which was fantastic. We got the Han Solo movie, which was fantastic.
But and did JJ really have to do anything with either one of those?
No, he did not.
And that's why they were good. They were
good because they had to. They did the same thing that. Sorry, the author name that you said.
Timothy Zahn.
Yeah, they did what Timothy Zahn did, where they abide by the canon, but they didn't recon anything from the previous films.
Well, you know, danger, and Paramount has got this issue going on too. So years and years ago, back before when Next Gen had come out and was the only show, they had not brought out Deep Space Nine or anything else. The convention scene, that's when it really started to, you actually literally saw it start to tank. Or fandom for Star Trek start to tank. And I got to talking to people who ran other international fan clubs and people who were running the conventions and even had a chance to have some conversations with some of the stars who were speaking and stuff. And there was a theme going on, and that was we're getting, because that was also when they were starting to do movies again. And so all of a sudden it was, well, we're not doing a movie every two, three years. So, you know, there's anticipation that builds up. And so fans are clamoring for the content. Now we've got Star Trek on every week, and we have a movie almost every year. And, the common theme was, there's too much. Because there's no place for that to build up. And we're seeing that happen with Star Trek. Now, I will say this. I think overall...
Which is why I oppose shows like Lower Decks and Prodigy.
Yeah. I think overall, they're making good quality content.
Lower Decks marketing was especially misleading, but when it says that it has the involvement of, like, one of the people from, like, Rick and Morty, and it's just this writer from Rick and Morty, and it's not even close to Rick and Morty's actual, like, genius and hilarity.
That's true as well. But... I think they're doing a good job as long as they don't go overboard. They're coming close to what I call the saturation point with Star Trek. If they get to the point where they have Star Trek on more than once a week, you're over the saturation point. And even the once a week thing is going to get tiring after a couple years. It will. I think Disney's already hit it. They're oversaturating both the MCU shows and the Star Wars shows, but in particularly the Star Wars.
But they've already canceled half of what they announced for Star Wars.
Because fans are starting to become numb to it.
I think it's got more to do with cancel culture than...
Well, there's that too.
Than that,
but. It's both. It's a combination of both. It's not just one or the other. It's both.
I don't know. I think the MCU's still got enough juice in it. I mean, we had a pretty...
Well, I'll tell you why I think the
decent break between Falcon and the Winter Soldier and Loki. And they're different enough shows that I think you can do that.
Well, the issue I think that we're seeing in the MCU universe is not just MCU related. I think it is superhero related. Yeah. I loved a lot of the DC shows. That
so essentially you're saying that in a sense Scorsese is kind of right.
Yes and no. So here's the issue. I loved a lot of the DC shows. The Arrow show was excellent until the very end, which is so true after they get 6-7 seasons in. They, because they deviated so far from the comic book universe to do the show universe, which MCU has done too.
Which they've had to do.
Yeah. That people get bored with it, even if they're producing good content. Now, I will say this about the CW and Warner Brothers and the last Wonder Woman movie, 84, and the Justice League movie, I thought were excellent, but the shows suck. I can't watch. I loved Legends of Tomorrow, because it was kind of tongue in cheek, and they were kind of the anti-heroes, and that show has gotten to be so boring.
Well, that's a show that's probably gone further than it needed to.
The Flash has gotten boring.
I've had issues with The Flash from the beginning. I just can't get into it.
You know, Supergirl, thank God, is going to end because it's gotten boring. But my feelings of boredom for the shows are not limited to just the DC shows. I just don't find any of the superhero shows. I mean, I'll watch them because it's something I can throw away. In a way, it's kind of like I feel about NCIS, regular NCIS.
Right.
It's happened. It's been on for so long. It's no longer entirely. I cannot. You know what the issue is? Something that Star Trek, even Lower Decks and stuff, even though that's tongue in cheek, that I still get to, is one of the things about science fiction and fantasy shows, superhero shows, is that there's this suspension of disbelief that can go on. And so you feel like you're immersed into the world when you're watching the show. I don't feel that with the MCU shows and the... Now, I can go back and watch the original Captain America movie and the original... about the first three Iron Man movies, and I feel immersed in the Marvel Universe. But after Captain America and Winter Soldier, I'm like, and so I have a hard time getting into the shows. I mean, like I said, I'll watch them. And I really thought I would get into, because the Thor movies are ones that I really get into, those and the Captain America. And I'm like, man, I can't hardly watch this now.
I've not watched.
Particularly when they let Thor get fat.
I've not watched any of the Tom Holland Spider-Man.
Me neither. No interest.
Not that I don't want to watch them. It's I can't find them anywhere. They're not on any streaming service
at all. I like Tom Holland as Spider-Man, but it's too late for me. I can't get immersed into the universe, so it's not
like the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man film.
Yeah, he liked the Andrew Garfield ones, and my wife liked the Tobey Maguire ones.
The Tobey Maguire ones are okay.
So you got to the third one.
They have infamous moments that have been memed to death, but the Tobey Maguire ones also have some stuff that people overlook, and usually the seriousness of some things. It's by Spider-Man 3, and when they have, like, you know, the Venom and Black, I'm trying to say this without having words come out horribly wrong that I don't mean, but, like, you know, the Black Spider-Man suit.
My issue with that one was Spider-Man the musical. I can do without.
Well, the other thing that is all of that disturbed me about Spider-Man is this whole fight between, because Sony got licensed Spider-Man early on because they're the ones who actually did the Tobey Maguire movies, mm-hmm. and so they're still doing cartoons that are not even part of the MCU. But they get to do them, and they're horrible. I mean, it's just it's stuff that you wouldn't have been entertaining, you know, as a half-hour TV show after school in the 80s, you know, to sell Spider-Man toys.
Into the Spider-Verse was a great film, though.
I didn't like that. I was bored.
I don't know.
Maybe it's me. It's just the genre. I know that, you know, Star Trek and Star Wars traditionally as... Well, particularly Star Trek, because it's true sci-fi, where Star Wars is more like...
Space opera?
Space opera. They don't appeal to as great an audience, typically, as superhero movies. But I'll tell you, a superhero show I love is The Boys on Amazon.
But you know why that is?
Dr. McCoy's in that movie.
Well, let's start with that. But There's no fanboys talking about, well, in issue 45 of The Boys, this guy does this, and so no wings on the helmet, I don't care.
Yeah. Well, it's true. It's all new superheroes and stuff. And, you know, and again, for a lot of people, I'm sure they despise The Boys because the superheroes are not heroes.
And then there's that. Because it's a very different superhero show.
But you know what superhero show I can watch over and over and over again? Even as campy as all get out, too.
Batman 66?
No. The Greatest American Hero.
You know, I have that on DVD.
You go back and watch it. It's on Netflix. I've watched the first season over again. You go back and watch it, and...
It gets hard to watch somewhere in the second season.
Yeah.
Because that only lasted three.
Yeah.
And then they tried to bring it back with a girl.
Yes.
And
I don't even think I think that has somewhere disappeared because that's not on any of the streaming services. But.
I haven't finished the third season to know if it's.
And you know, the other thing about Greatest American Hero is it's a lot like the original TOS. I don't think they aired the episodes in the order they were filmed. So there's weirdnesses in continuity and things. But it's still, it's an entertaining and an immersive experience still to this day. It's kind of like the A-Team. You know, and a lot of it I will blame on the fact that they, and maybe this is the musician in me, they use music to help set the mood, get you involved, you know. I can still hear the A-Team theme in my head today. And Greatest American Hero?
Air Supply.
Yeah.
The thing about Greatest American Hero is he's on a journey to figure out how to be use the suit.
Yeah.
And to be a hero. That's the
well, and then
it's the journey.
Then you also what else, but you know what else is great about that show that I never picked up on as a kid though, is Robert Stack and his jaded view of the world, and you know he represents the part of the parts of society that would make a sacrifice or a compromise to get to as a means to an end. And it's great to see that juxtaposition in the show, because it's a little bit obvious. I mean, they're whomp hitting you on top of the head with it.
Well, they had to have characters that were not the same.
Yeah.
In order to play off each other, you know, and so many of these shows now, everybody's got the same motivations, doing the same things for the same reasons at the same time, and it's
yeah.
The only difference is the uniform they're wearing.
Yep. And
which is why I like Loki so much.
Well, I mean, the thing and why I will continue to watch Loki, is because Loki's not a hero.
Exactly.
You know, he's the god of mischief, the trickster god in Greek or in Norse mythology. And so he's going to live up to that.
It was so good for to see this character finally admit that the reason why he loses is it's all part of the illusion. And in the end, the illusion is nothing more than that.
Yeah. Well, what I also love, there's a couple things I did really enjoy. I love how they use the Infinity Stones as paperweights in TVA. I thought that was awesome.
I was also amused by that, but for a different reason.
And then I also liked the time twister.
Yes.
And that one guard, and he just woo woo woo. Don't you?
You talking
about
MODOK? No, in Loki.
Oh, no. I forgot about MODOK.
Yeah, we did forget. I loved MODOK. It's a solely Seth Green show. But I am not a huge fan of
Patton Oswalt. Same thing.
I loved him as MODOK.
There isn't anyone else they could have cast for that.
No, not at all.
The Infinity Stones thing. Why I enjoyed that moment so much was I could hear the fanboys through the internet complaining about how in issue 86 of the Avengers, they talked about how awesome the Infinity Stones were always going to be. I just love that. Anytime that they can truly shake things up. Although I'm somewhat concerned that what they've done nullifies the importance of all the movies prior.
I know. Well, that was my whole thing about when I typed in on your commented on your post on Facebook and I said retcon. Yeah. It was like they're basically saying that
Robert Downey Jr. Tony Stark's sacrifice now means nothing.
Exactly.
You know, and that's, to me, the...
Well, and he wasn't the only one who made a sacrifice. Well, I mean,
Romanoff and
Cap,
Gamora and Cap.
You know?
I mean, Cap, I really don't... I've never really felt sorry for Cap, because especially after he decided, oh, well, I'm just going to go back in time and live my good life with Peggy anyway.
Yeah.
I'm with Loki on that one. If anybody should be in trouble, it's Cap.
But that was supposed to be how...
Sure it was.
We're going to explain it all away. No, that's a whole other thing I think they did wrong. And I know that a lot of that decision was made by Chris Evans and not by Disney. They wanted Captain America to be part of it. And Chris Evans said, "Here's my contractual obligation. I'm tired of being Captain America." The problem is that was such an iconic role, he will always be cast as Captain America, regardless of what he does.
But even today, they're still talking about him coming back.
Well, and I think they left a loophole open. And that's the other thing. So it's kind of like, you know how we always joke about when you die in Star Trek, even if we see you die, you don't die?
Well, I blame that on Leonard Nimoy.
That's MCU. All of them. Just because Romanoff and all of them are dead doesn't mean they're really dead. I mean,
there's no way Romanoff could come back. I mean, multiverse is the only way she could come back.
Well, in DC, see, they killed the multiverse off.
We're not there yet, but Loki might.
Yeah, yeah.
Although, you had Doctor Strange coming up, and that's going to be all multiverse, so I don't know.
Very true. Very true. Well, I think we will leave it at there. It's let us know what you think. Send us some feedback to gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's GIZMOSAPIENS @gmail.com. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.
You've been listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's GIZMOSAPIENS@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.